We made it to a Thursday here on Main Street. Welcome to the show. I'm Craig Blumenschein. A packed show today. The second half of the show, Dave Thompson, our news director, and I will review this week's news of North Dakota and rev up your engines and quit turning left all the time. Matt Olean reviews the summer blockbuster F1. We begin Main Street today by recalling that yesterday on the program, we met 89-year-old Vern Hunter, a retired architect who now spends his days as a devoted volunteer along with other volunteers at the Northern Plains Botanic Garden in Fargo. Today, we continue our walking tour with Vern, and we've arrived at one of his favorite spots, the Japanese Garden. It's part of a peaceful 6-acre oasis just east of Hector International Airport, where volunteers and a small paid staff are blending traditional Japanese landscaping with hardy prairie plants and dreaming big about what comes next.
I'm standing on a Japanese bridge designed very much like you'd find in Japan. And we built this bridge, I and especially two of our former paid staff members. And we're standing over a dry garden, entrance to the main Japanese section. And you can see that it has rake pattern in it. And some people call it a Zen garden, but it's not a Zen garden. We don't practice Zen, but we put patterns in there. There's no requirement for certain patterns. You can see maybe this pattern is waves coming from a waterfall at the end, but it's a dry garden. And so this side is a pattern that you can see that I did. Now on this side, this, you know, I got tired of the kids coming in here and destroying my pattern. I said, let's see what they'll do if we leave our rake, which you see right there, and invite them to come in and play in it. So you can see this is a pattern on this side of the bridge that was done by some youngster as he came with his parents. So it's immersive and, participation by kids in the public, and we want to encourage that. We like that. So as we walk by the bridge, we come to the gate, and I might point out a Japanese maple. This little thing is my honey, and these aren't supposed to be hardy in our area. It's about 4 years old now, doing well, as you can see. It's about 5-6 feet tall. In the fall, it'll turn a beautiful gold and red, so I'm really proud of this, and it's about as Japanese as you can get. And then over there, we're pruning that Scotch pine to a Japanese form. And this is the gate that leads us through to the main future Japanese garden that we're working on. And I'd call your attention to this plaque. It's in memorial. It's actually a reflection of when that Japanese group that gave us the Japanese dolls came to help us set up the dolls the first time and explain it. And we came out to the garden here and took their picture. And while they were here, we planted 3 cherry trees in memoriam of the gifting of cherry trees to Washington, D.C. So we have those trees here. And this is a picture taken of when they were here visiting us. And this is the plan that Sadafumi did for our Japanese garden. So this is pretty graphic. We have another one in more detail that we follow, but this is a graphic explanation of the garden. So if we enter through the gate and look, you'll see the primary area that we connect with the Japanese garden, and we have sculpted it. We have underground irrigation system, the pathway system, the grass is doing well. We just completed this plant growing project. We got a grant from the North Dakota Forestry Service, so it's a $17,000 project of planting shrubs and trees, and they're doing very well and gave another dimension to the garden. So this won't be the end of the planting, but it's a very good start, and you can see the pathway system. We have yet to introduce rock in here, because rock is certainly one of the big elements of a Japanese garden. So,
what's your biggest challenge in keeping the garden or expanding the garden as you wish?
It's one thing basically, of course, is money. If we had enough money, we could hire the staff that it takes for the entire garden and maintain it. But not having that kind of money, you count on volunteers. So our biggest challenge is volunteers and money.
On your plate in the short term in the Japanese garden, Vern?
Oh, well, I can show you if we walk over there. If you look at the far end, see the mounds of earth that are covered now with planting and with weeds, I must say. We hope that we're able to raise the money that our next major project here will be a koi pond. And we'll want to build a hill right there with the stream coming down, feeding the koi pond, where kids can touch the koi, feed them. And then we have to pump the water back up the hill, so it's a circulating stream feeding the koi pond. And that would be a major attraction out here.
Why was that important in Japanese
koi
culture?
Koi ponds are very common in a Japanese garden. And you know, I've been searching for why, your very question is a good one. Why are koi fish important to the Japanese gardens and Japanese people? And I haven't really come up with an answer. I looked at a book that's 200 years old, and there was only one reference to fish, and they made the comment, if there's fish in the pond, so forth. But I don't really know the importance, but I know it would be a major attraction, and we definitely want it if we can raise the money and get it developed.
What would you say after visitors, like we just met the couple from Detroit Lakes, when they're done, what's most memorable for them generally? What do you think they take away from the Northern Prairie Botanical Garden?
Yeah, I think if we stand here overlooking the Japanese garden and look beyond, you see trees in the distance, you've seen the grass and the open space. And I think just the feeling you get when you stand here and look at this big space, as well maintained as we can, I think they just like being here. Like that couple, look how slowly they're strolling. And you know they're going to enjoy it. They're going to speak about the value of this when they leave to their friends and family. So I think it's just the magnitude of the whole thing. Not that it's that large, but I think what's being done here shows some thought and some beauty. We hope so anyway.
I feel like I might get in trouble if I walk across the grass.
Yeah, the grass is good. Look how tough
beautiful.
It is.
Yep. You know, the airport, surprisingly to me, as close as you are, isn't really a much of a disturbance.
Well, it's not, but it's one of the things they try to preach in Japanese gardens is that it should be peaceful and quiet. And we struggle a little bit with that because of the airport. On certain days, you can hear the airport a lot. We struggle on 28th Avenue and University because we have people out here that storm their cars up and down the street. So we struggle a little without that. And then the Homeward Animal Shelter, they're great neighbors, great people. They serve a service, to the community. But at times their dogs, especially at feeding times, they make a lot of noise. Now, that's all in reference to the fact that a garden, we try to keep it peaceful. So as much as you think it's peaceful, it is, especially in certain hours. I tell you, the evening hours from 4 to 6 are beautiful out here because it's quite quiet. But we try to keep it quiet. And the trees help, you know, the shelter belts and all the trees help cut down the sound. But we're talking about building a venue out here so we could have events and so forth. And it worries me just a little bit about the 737s rising right at the crescendo of our concert. But we'll see how that goes. So again, I would point out the Japanese koi pond that would be right there, and the hill on the other side of the path over there. And then the water streaming down, feeding the koi ponds. And
a small depression that we're looking at, but it looks like it could be a pond tomorrow.
It does.
With a little bit of work.
People get close to it and look for fish, but there are none in there. Hopefully, next year. We have signs along the pathway that kind of show what our future plan is for this area. Here's a picture of the koi pond.
And relative to planning, you mentioned that Bernie, you're part of a board, or used to serve on the board.
Yes.
Is that the group that's kind of doing this planning and decision making?
Well, like all boards, you know, their responsibility is policy making and fundraising. So, you know, like all nonprofits, which we are a 501c3 nonprofit, like all nonprofit organizations, you have varying degrees of progress, depending on the board, depending on the administration. So, yes. Their duty is to help us and guide us, not necessarily to make all the decisions, because we staff people that out here like to feed into what's needed out here and so forth. Right now we have a very good board and very good administration on the board, so we appreciate that, and that's good. they're concerned with our progress, and they want to help us all they can. This, on our left, we might see a zigzag bridge, which is common in Japanese garden, and then you can see the iris garden around it, and we're just developing this. I made a call out to our public for irises. Anyone cleaning out their irises, we would take them, so you can see what we got. Again, it's participation by the public, which we really like. They'd leave them at the greenhouse, and then we bring them out here and plant them. So the zigzag bridge philosophy is that you come to a junction, you stop, and you look at a different view of the garden. And again, it's the meditative quietness and contemplative. You can see that the view from that overhang there to the Japanese koi pond and the hill would be a beautiful view. And we ask people, you know, to forget their problems and enjoy the garden for what it is.
There's no need to be in a hurry while you're here.
What time is it, by the way?
I don't know. That's a good thing today, isn't it?
Yeah.
Neither one of us have a phone with us. We're just enjoying the morning.
We are. It's beautiful. I love it. I should be working, but I enjoy this too.
I think this is working for you, at least. For
you bet.
I don't know that I call it work. I'm enjoying my conversation with Vern Hunter. He's a volunteer at the Northern Prairie Botanical Garden Society in this beautiful 6-acre space that is just east of Fargo's airport, of Hector Field.
Okay, we'll hit a couple more gardens here. This is one of our latest addition. It's an herb garden. People are interested in herbs. You know, a lot of people cook now and so forth. Well, people are interested in this garden because it has herbs and so forth in the garden. So it's a work in progress.
Many different herbs too, I'll say.
Yes. And this on our right is our edible forest. And we have a fellow, a tree expert, Jim Walla, whose project this is. And he leads tours once in a while. And so you're invited to come to a tour and learn about the fruits and plants that can grow in our area and the problems that he has and he sees, and you can learn from those and you can sample the fruit.
You can sample, but you're not to harvest.
You're not to harvest, right. We discourage people from even sampling until the fruit is developed. So we might just find something to eat.
What is here? What are the different fruits and nuts that are available?
Oh, most everything. Apples, Juneberries, chokecherries, strawberries, all of those things. We have a couple interesting projects going on. Those two raised beds that you see there, Jim wanted to test the difference between growing strawberry or Juneberries in a raised bed or a sunken bed. So he discovered that the raised bed that you see is the best way to go. So he took the plants out of the underground bed and built another raised bed. So it's that sort of thing, some of that that goes on. But more than that, it's just enjoying this and learning about different plants and so forth. Here's the strawberry bed. And as we all know, strawberries are out of their season right now, pretty much over. But we had a lot of strawberries during the season. Might be able to find a few. Might be able.
Oh, there's one right there.
Sure. Oops, that one's overdone. Gave me a messy.
It looked nice and red.
Yeah, it was. Here's one that, here, look at this. Aren't you lucky?
Ha ha ha. Perfect in every way. How does it taste?
Tastes good. It should.
The answer is great.
Yeah, and the season's pretty well over, as we know. But we can go on.
Vern, one thing I want to remark.
Yes.
That I've noticed is there are volunteers around, and you're all very approachable and willing to answer questions.
Yeah. We encourage people to do that. Every chance I get, I talk to people, ask them how they found out about us, where they're from. It's not only fun and interesting, but it's educational to know who we're getting and why and how they find out about us. And so part of the fun, of course, is showing off the garden. So that's why we're so amiable. We're basically good people. This is an interesting project. These are hazelnuts. Ann Johnson develops hazelnuts and been quite successful in our area developing hazelnuts. And you don't, they're not ripe yet, of course, and haven't developed, but it's interesting that he's able to make a success. Here's some. And that'll develop into a nut eventually. right here in North Dakota, which is intriguing to us.
Sure.
So that's kind of fun.
Has anyone surveyed the birds that are here that we hear?
Yeah, you do hear them. We haven't.
This might be a birder's paradise, at least a local birder's paradise.
It would. And that's a point we made when we wrote our grant, is that it can be a birder place. And we enjoy seeing them. We just haven't formalized their presence. Here are the raspberries. You can see they're coming on. And if we look closely, we might find some that are...
So close.
Close. This is pretty hard. That's not going to do the job. Let me pick this one. At least you get an idea, maybe, but there are ways yet from ripening. But look at all of them. That'll be fun when they...
Yes, it will.
When they develop. They're just a little too green to eat.
Have you ever tried to grow something here you thought would just work well, and turns out it wouldn't work in our climate?
Oh, I tell you, and it's not only the climate, it might be other factors too, you know, the way they're cared for, if we kind of slip up or something like that. You know, if you haven't had a failure, you're not a gardener. So it's not that we have a lot of failures, but we roll with the bunches if we do. And Jim is very knowledgeable out here in the edible forest, so he hasn't had very many failures.
Do you have a relationship with any NDSU students who come to the garden here to learn?
Not so much that. Although the garden that we're approaching, the children's garden, part of that was actually designed by NDSU design students. I have an advisory committee for the Japanese garden, and one of my advisory committee members is Todd West, who is with the plant pathology department at NDSU. He's contributed a couple plants to us out here. But beyond that, you know, students are busy, and we haven't had a lot of exposure to NDSU students. This is the latest project of Jim. You can see these apple trees that are planted at an angle, and what he'll do is connect them at the top, and we'll have hoops on it. And then they're apple trees, and we hope at some point that we'll be able to walk and look around and see the blossoms and maybe even the apples hanging from the trees. So
they're planted at angles. On
yes.
the left, they're leaning to the right, and on the right side, they're leaning to the left, and you can see how they'll intersect within a couple years.
Yes. Isn't that neat? And to think that maybe you can see the blossoms or the apples underneath here as you walk through in the shade, it's kind of fun. Here is our interpretive sign for the edible forest. There's one at every both entrances, and you can see a multiple variety of things that we have in here. I see juneberry, apricot, plum, grape, pecan, raspberries, chestnuts, gooseberries, raspberries. Currants and gooseberries remind me of my grandmother's farm up at Kenmare. When we go up visit her years ago, we used to go to her currant garden and eat currants and gooseberries.
32 different varieties of plants and growing.
Yeah, and people are invited to come and go on Jim's tours. Again, go on our website, look for the information of our events and so forth, and you'll see it all there. This is what we call our children's garden. It was formerly called an ABC garden. Throughout the garden are the letters of the alphabet. For instance, we're standing next to the letter P, and there are corresponding plants in here with the first letter of the letter P. For instance, here are petunias, here are peonies in the letter P garden. And you can go out throughout the garden that way and see this. So this was done long ago by Boy Scouts and NDSU design students, and then we took it over when the Yunker Farm Museum let it go.
Very colorful part of the ground.
It is. It's the place where most of the flowers and so forth. When you talk about a Japanese garden, for instance, you won't see a lot of flowers. You'll see a lot of green. So the other thing that happened then, when we took over the children's garden, in the center we built a sensory garden. And that sensory garden was designed again by NDSU design students. The sensory garden we developed in here, in the middle. So we try to touch all of the senses with plants. Some of them prickly, some of them silky, many of them edible, certainly scented. and or plants that move with the wind. So, you know, if we walk through here, we might be able to find something that we can, you know, what plants are like, that if you take this one and pull a leaf, let me rub it and see what I get. What does that smell like?
I don't know that I get popcorn.
You know, I usually get more of a smell when I do that. Let's try this one.
But there's certainly, this garden certainly smells wonderful.
What do you get for that?
I do smell the minty.
So, that's the sensory garden. And then, you know, one of our senses, of course, is being able to hear. And we have a xylophone. The kids love to come and play their favorite songs on our xylophone.
Perfect sound for the garden.
So we touch the senses, we show the alphabet numbers with appropriate plants, and we love this garden. As you can see, it's the most colorful part of the entire garden. And then our last garden on the tour is the children's, or the fairy garden, adjacent to the children's garden. And the young children love to come here and look through the fence and see the fairy garden. As you can see, it's a miniature city or miniature area, and you can pick out, for instance, there's a farmstead with the animals and a barn.
Santa Claus? Yeah, is that Santa Claus?
It could be. Yeah, it is. Santa Claus coming. And then over there is a Japanese pagoda or tea house on the left. And up on the hill there is looks like a mysterious castle.
I do see a troll here, you guys. Right over here.
Yeah.
A cabin.
Kids love this. And that's where we'd like to build our venue, have concerts and so forth. You bet. So, Craig, that kind of finishes our tour of the Northern Plains Botanic Garden.
Wonderful. Hidden gem.
It is.
Beautiful. Generally, you mentioned there's about a four-month season, about from Memorial Day to Labor Day.
Sure. Is
when folks come. Well, for more information, what should they Google?
Well, they can go online, npbgs.org, O-R-G, will take them to different areas of our website. They can find our events. They can find pictures of the different gardens and anything else.
Nice virtual tour there.
It is. Yes, there is a nice virtual tour. All of our legal information, our annual meeting minutes, and our budgets and financial statements, all of that is included in our social media.
You talked about different fundraising opportunities. When do those happen during the year, Vern?
Well, as time permits, for our people that are involved, you met Lisa Brown earlier as you entered the grounds. She does a lot of our grant writing. I do some of it. So fundraising, of course, is something you never stop doing. But when you're busy out here working in the gardens, you don't have a lot of time for those other things. But we like to think that we're fundraising all the time. We're a 501c3 nonprofit. We count on donations, memberships, grants. So we encourage people to join. We just raised our grant, our membership fee, $5 to $25 for a single person. We had never raised it in the 25 years we've been in existence. We'd never raised it, so membership is cheap. So, and you support a gym in our area. We're big enough, sophisticated enough that our area needs and deserves a garden like this, and we should have it.
A koi pond in the works. Apple trees trained into arches, and a fairy garden that delights young imaginations. At nearly 90, our guest has been Vern Hunter. He's still planting seeds for the future. The Northern Plains Botanic Garden may be tucked away just east of Hector Field, but as Vern reminds us, the best places to grow aren't always the loudest or most obvious. Sometimes you have to wander a quiet path, unplug, and let the garden do the talking. Still to come on Main Street, a review of this week's news with our news director Dave Thompson, and Matt Olean reviews Brad Pitt's new movie, F1. Stay with us.
Gather round, everybody.
The Thursday walk-up music that tells us it's time to review the news here in North Dakota with our great, long-serving news director, Dave Thompson. Dave, welcome back to Main Street.
Thanks, Craig. Good to be here.
Dave, I hope you had a wonderful 4th of July. You and I haven't spoken in a couple of weeks, but there has been a lot going on in the state. The first issue I want to talk with you about is something that I think we've all seen in our mailboxes, these home protection plans. The Public Service Commission now plans to investigate a relationship between utilities and these home protection plans. What's that about?
Well, what's that about is that the PSC received some informal complaints saying that some of these mailings they're getting have the utility on there along with the home protection plan. And there was some concern that the home protection plan is conflating this. They're trying to say, hey, we're endorsed by a utility. And they want to find out what's really going on here. So it's a consumer protection type thing. I don't think the PSC is looking for punishment. They're just kind of looking for more information at this point.
They want to make sure they're not overselling that which they're representing.
Absolutely correct, yes.
Dave, the North Dakota Ethics Commission is looking for two new members, and I should note, you really don't have to have any previous training as a lawyer or as a government bureaucrat to serve.
No, they want people who are interested in government and clean government and ethical government. They may not have to have much training in ethics, ethics classes or anything like that. You need a desire to serve to make sure that we're getting the government we should. So they'll be looking for two people. You see how there's actually three openings. But the third one, there's a person by the name of Murray Sogsveen. I know him very well. He is on that commission, and he wants to be reappointed for another term, which is good.
Dave, this is all about transparency, about people having access to information, and then accountability of government.
I will tell you that there is a group of reporters who think I should be on the Ethics Commission, but that is a conflict of interest because I cover the Ethics Commission.
Sure. Dave, some North Dakota condominium associations say that they're having trouble finding insurance. This is a troubling story.
It is, and I'll tell you how I got into it. I am on the board of a condo association, and our insurance carrier dropped us. So we had to go looking for insurance, and it took us a while. We did find some carriers. Our premiums are going to be higher, of course, but we've been told that some companies are just not writing condo insurance right now. So you have to go through a little bit of work to get somebody to insure you. And maybe the best way to do that is go through like an independent insurance agent who represents several companies, and they may be able to find you insurance. That's not what happened with us. We just got lucky. We got a tip that there was an insurance firm that's still covering condos. And they were the low bidder. We had three or four bids, but they were all more than double the insurance we had last year.
And what's the reason for that, Dave? Do we know?
Well, part of it is they don't like the fact that, you know, we've had storms, we've had hail, we have wind, we have now occasional tornadoes, of course. And they're worried about, you know, their response. Will they have the money to do it? Are there going to be people who are going to be upset? That type of thing. So I think we have a good insurance firm that is coming in to help our condo association. And I decided, let's go to the insurance department and find out what they're hearing. Because the insurance commissioner has been talking about that insurance companies are a little bit hesitant to come to North Dakota. So he's been talking about this for last year.
Unfortunately, it may become harder, not easier, for residents to get the insurance they need, whether you're a homeowner owning your own private residence or part of a condominium. So we'll follow this with you, Dave. Dave, federal funding for adult basic education is on hold for now. This is not just a North Dakota problem. It's a nationwide problem, but it is striking home here.
It is striking home because in North Dakota, we have a 86% success rate from this Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act that provides funding for adult education to help certain learners get into the workforce or into a community college. The idea is to get them into the work world, and the supporters say this makes sense because if you get them into the work world, they're not going to be on assistance. They're not going to be on, you know, welfare programs. So why not spend the money? But OMB, the federal OMB, has basically said they're going to review the funding. And I don't remember the exact figure about how much funding is going to be reviewed, but it was supposed to be released July 1. Now it's on hold.
Let's continue with this funding, putting school districts and Boys and Girls Clubs, et cetera, in limbo. North Dakota after school providers are now wondering what to do in light of frozen federal grants.
And it's very interesting what is going on there. You know, why are these grants being frozen? Is it part of the whole DOGE effort? And it's really going to put the squeeze on some programs. I'm thinking about Head Start. I'm thinking about some of the other programs that they have.
Boys and Girls Club, and as I mentioned, others.
They're really concerned about that because they do receive some federal dollars on that. So maybe things, you know, will eventually come loose and maybe they'll get the funding. But for the moment, there's a pause.
And it's $25.4 million, which is significant for sure.
It is significant for North Dakota.
Dave, Governor Armstrong now has unveiled a new loan program for post-storm recovery. Of course, we've been devastated in some areas by storms over the last 3 or 4 weeks or so. What's new about that program?
Well, in these storms, which included high winds, tornadoes, some, you know, grain bins were blown over, some elevators were damaged, and now there's a loan program that's going to be more of a bridge loan program. They're going to offer loans to the Bank of North Dakota and their member banks to these farmers, because farmers do have insurance on their grain bins. When the insurance comes due, then they can pay it back. So it gets them back faster. And there's another component to this, Craig, that they're talking about, is that maybe there's a way you can get, you know, farmers in one area that were really hard hit, they all get together with the same firm so they can get, you know, these things built and built fast, because they can all do, you know, they can come up and do these things. So they're looking to do that because, you know, it's getting toward harvest season and we need storage.
Hopefully this will all speed recovery for everyone.
Absolutely.
Dave, there's a North Dakota church now that's been listed in the National Register of Historic Places. It's the first Presbyterian church that's in downtown Fargo. It's beautiful.
It is a beautiful church. There are a number of beautiful churches, and if you go back to a Prairie Public documentary about churches, you have to take a look at that.
Dave. I haven't seen that. Thanks for pointing it out.
Very good. Because there's a church in Strasburg that's very, very good too.
Dave, there are grants now available to help small town grocers and tourism in North Dakota. This is important for many.
That's right. You know, we talk about food deserts, and there are local cities and towns where they don't have a grocery store anymore. They may have a convenience store, but that's not providing fresh lettuce, that type of thing. So now this was an effort by the North Dakota legislature, especially legislators from Northeast North Dakota, to get a state program that will help, you know, somebody who wants to put up a grocery store in a Langdon and help them, you know, get on their feet, get things stacked. And they're also working on cooperatives among towns to, you know, get food from one supplier, which is going to be very interesting when you try to keep that rural grocery store and that rural grocery network afloat.
I should note that successful applicants can receive up to $150,000, and the program's open to local governments, hoping to serve, and tribal governments as well, I should point out.
Tribal governments too, yes.
Hoping to serve those with populations of 4,500 people or fewer, and applicants must be able to match the grant money by 20%. Dave, what are you and your team working on?
Okay, I've got to tell you about a story that I'm going to have probably early next week or maybe the end of this week. How much is it going to cost to replace the speed limit signs on the interstates when it goes from 75 to 80 miles per hour?
Do you know the number?
It's going to be over $400,000.
Wow.
But the legislature did put $400,000 into the budget for that.
Dave, in Wyoming, they have went to this system where they can push a button and change the speed of the interstates over much of the state. That would be forward thinking, perhaps.
That would be forward thinking. Must be electronics of some sort.
Absolutely, yeah. And they do it primarily for weather, not because they've upped the speed limit in Wyoming. But that's happening here, and it's happening soon, Dave, August 1st. Thanks for reviewing the news with us. Our news director here at Prairie Public, Dave Thompson. He and I sit down and review the news each and every week here on Main Street. Dave, have a great weekend.
We'll do, Craig. You too.
Gather round, everybody. I'm gonna tell you a story about a little fella.
Support for Prairie Public is provided by Josh Beauchet, broker and realtor with Real Broker LLC. With a team of agents serving homebuyers, sellers, and investors throughout North Dakota, the Detroit Lakes area, and Northwest Minnesota. Josh can be reached at 701-367-3513.
There's the music we look forward to every Thursday here on Main Street, and buckle up, it's F1, the movie we're reviewing with our good friend Matt Olean. Matt, welcome back to Main Street.
Thanks, Greg.
This is a high-octane ride, a movie that I have seen. Brad Pitt, of course, he's the star. He plays a grizzled former driver pulled back onto the track for one last shot at glory. Matt, I love the film. I love the music with the film, Matt. Mm-hmm. Intense. And I liked it.
I like the film. I don't think it's the best racing film ever, though, and I'll get to that in a minute, what I think are the better racing films. First thing I'll say is, now this is just my opinion, I think movies about car racing are more interesting than watching a race itself. I grew up with a dad who complained about car racing. So you can't tell who's ahead after the first lap, so we really didn't watch it. I think it's a battle of machinery and mechanics more than really an athletic sport. But I will say,
especially in F1, we learn.
Yes. So I think that the thing that this film has going for it, and I did like it. I didn't love it, but I think it's about 10 minutes too long, because we have to go through every single race on this thing. So he plays Sonny Hayes. Brad Pitt is Sonny Hayes. He's the best that never was. And Javier Bardem finds him after he participates in the 24 Hours of Daytona, which Sonny Hayes is part of, and they win. And Bardem is a former F1 racer who's now a team owner. His team sucks. They have a word describing their car that I can't repeat on radio. They don't have a good enough car to compete. They're basically finishing last or out of the money every week on Formula One. But he wants Sonny Hayes to come in and be the second driver on the team, along with the younger hotshot driver that's in the film as well. And I like the dynamic of that. I think the thing about the film is it's a predictable movie star vehicle, and it's a vehicle for Brad Pitt to show what a great movie star he is. It's a story of redemption. You can see the plot beats coming before they come. The drivers are going to clash. They're going to have a rivalry.
On the same team here.
Same team. But you know that driver friction's going to come. Bardem's got to keep them from destroying each other. Kerry Condon plays the car designer, Irish actress who's very good. And you know sparks are going to fly with her and Pitt at some point. I like that they had a female as kind of the car designer. And basically they need a better car to compete. But he comes in, he kind of shows his chops, his veteran ways at driving, which sometimes are aggressive, sometimes too aggressive. But I think what works with the film is Joseph Kosinski, the director, who also directed Tom Cruise in Top Gun Maverick. They're trying to find that same formula that worked for Top Gun Maverick. And so far it's grossed over $200 million worldwide, which is a testament to car racing and also Brad Pitt as a movie star. Remember a couple weeks ago we talked about, is Tom Cruise the greatest male film star of all time? I think we can safely say Brad Pitt is top 10. He's similar age to Cruise. He puts people in the theater. I think he's a little better actor. I like his on-screen persona better than I like Tom Cruise's. And the fact that he can open a car racing film, which really isn't based on any franchise, is a testament to Pitt's stardom. So I liked all of that part. I think the film's a little too long. I think the car racing scenes are phenomenal. You feel like you're in the cockpit with them. What I also like, Craig, was the behind-the-scenes stuff with the team, talking about tires, how long you can go on tires, when you have to come in for a pit stop. These are things I don't know. They also talk about race strategy. We're going to go hard first, not as hard in the middle, and they're having these like team meetings. It feels like you're on a football team. So I like that part of it a lot. In other racing films, we don't really see that as much. I think you really got taken down into the pits with what a team looks like. So I like that part of it. I like that it's making money. I like that an old-fashioned movie star like Brad Pitt can bring people in the theaters. And that's really what it is. It's a summer popcorn movie. We know the ending. We know what's going to happen. We know it's a tale of redemption. We know he's got a backstory. He's got a past. I'm not going to tell people what that is. There's a lot of past here of why he didn't get to the top of the mountain. But again, Bardem is giving him that second chance. And my favorite line in the movie is near the end when Bardem is talking about car racing. He says, "Why do we do this? What's wrong with tennis or golf? You know, we put ourselves through danger and, you know, fires and crashes." So overall, I liked it. I do think the best racing movies I've ever seen are Ford versus Ferrari and Ron Howard's Rush. Those are both based on true stories. Interestingly enough, this is not.
F1 stands for Formula One. Mm-hmm. We had an exchange student in high school who lived with us, Matt, and he was from Germany. And he let us know that Formula One in Europe is a huge,
it's huge
deal.
It's huge.
Did that come off to you in this movie?
Yes. He, you know, when Bardem finds him, Pitt's in America. So he has to go to London. That's where the team is. It's definitely a European sport for sure. It's unusual to have American drivers, quite frankly. So him being brought into the fold with this young British driver, who's very good in the film as well, the young actor who plays the young British driver. It's huge in Europe. They're traveling all over the globe. You know, they're in Dubai. They're in Mexico City. They're in Vegas at one point. They're in Belgium. Most of the races are in Europe, Tokyo, of course. It's a huge sport. It's big in Europe. It's never quite caught on here. They do have some races here, like on the Vegas Strip. But basically, if you're going to put a gun to my head and tell me I have to watch a car race, I'll watch F1, because at least it's not around the same circle over and over and over like NASCAR. Don't get me started, Craig, on NASCAR, and I know I'm
talking to the guy who went to the Daytona 500 this year, by the way, man.
That's fine. I understand. I understand you like it. That's fine. It's just not my thing, but I think F1 is a little more exciting.
I read a little bit that they had to really come up with technology to film this thing. You talked about it, and it made me wonder whether that line was crossed into CGI or real filming, because it's so incredibly fast. It's incredibly tight, and it is a risky business. You know?
So there's definitely some stunt driving going on here, but it was confirmed that Pitt was driving at least 180 miles per hour in some of these cars. But yes, certainly to film car races is difficult to do. You're going to need stunt drivers all over the place. You're not going to put Brad Pitt's life at risk in this movie. Tom Cruise, different breed of animal. He likes to do all of his stunts. He's broken ankles on film sets, that kind of thing. But I do think whatever CGI they were using, Craig, versus real cars on the track, it works. You feel like you're there. You feel like you're watching a real race and not some cartoon, basically.
So let's step back and look at summer. How do you think summer at the movies is going, Matt?
So far, what I'm hearing is it's pretty good. We don't have that mega monstrous blockbuster yet.
This isn't it.
This is one of them. But typically... Jurassic. I mean, look, which I'm not going to see. I'm done with Jurassic.
We're not going to review it.
Superman will be next. I have no desire to go see more CGI dinosaurs. It's been done to death. Spielberg has nothing to do with it anymore, and I don't want to see it. So that obviously opened huge, like it's going to. There's a set audience that's going to go to that film, Superman. Interesting to see how Superman does. I'm really curious if Superman still has legs in 2025. The previews look interesting to me, so we'll see. So far, I think the summer is going fairly well. Are they ever going to top the Barbenheimer situation again? Lightning doesn't strike twice all the time. Two summers ago, Barbie and Oppenheimer. We may never see that again.
Do we know if there are some movies in front of us yet this summer that could become blockbusters?
Fantastic Four. What kind of legs does Fantastic Four have from Marvel with new actors, Pedro Pascal and all the others that are in Fantastic Four? They're trying to reboot Fantastic Four to see if this has legs. We did see recently with Marvel's Thunderbolts, that did better than a lot of the post-Avengers Endgame Marvel films. So that suggested if you've got the right cast, the right dynamics, that Marvel can hit it out of the park again. We'll see about Fantastic Four. That one I'm not really sure of. It's going to be very interesting to see what Fantastic Four and Superman do.
Let's turn to the Oscar part of our program. Matt, of course, Brad Pitt has won Academy Awards. It's a two-parter. What awards has he won?
He has won for Best Supporting Actor for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood in 2019. He also got a producing Oscar for 12 Years a Slave in 2013, where he has a kind of an interesting cameo at the end of that film.
And which actress also won a Best Picture Award for producing and also for Best Actress in 2020?
That was Frances McDormand for Nomadland.
Well done. You've been to the movies with Matt Oling.
Support for Prairie Public is provided by Jade Presents, bringing Trampled by Turtles with American Aquarium and Wild Horses to the Updistrict Festival Field in Fargo, Saturday, July 19th. Gates open at 5 p.m. Concert begins at 6:15, rain or shine. Details at jadepresents.com.
This is Dakota Datebook for July 10th. A notable North Dakotan of the past was a man named James Morris O'Neill, well known as a Civil War veteran. He was born in Ireland in 1840 and emigrated to America with his parents, arriving in Minnesota in 1854 at the age of 13. At the age of 22, O'Neill had joined the 1st Minnesota Regiment in April of 1861, enlisting as a private in Company I from Wabasha. O'Neill and the 1st Minnesota fought in the Battle of Bull Run in 1861, where now Corporal O'Neill was wounded by a bayonet thrust above the left knee. O'Neill also survived later battles at Fair Oaks and Savage's Station, then Antietam, where the 1st Minnesota suffered heavy losses, and Fredericksburg. In 1863, James O'Neill took part in a legendary bayonet charge. On July 2nd, the second day at Gettysburg, General Winfield Hancock ordered the 262 men of the 1st Minnesota to block a powerful Confederate counterattack near Cemetery Ridge. The regiment was guarding a Union artillery position when Hancock commanded them to fill a gap in the battle line. His reinforcements were still half a mile away. It was a desperate charge to buy just 5 minutes in time. Charging at double time speed, bayonets fixed, just 262 men ran at 1,600 Confederates. Within 10 minutes, 215 of those Minnesotans lay dead, dying, or wounded, but they plugged the gap. O'Neill was hit by a piece of shell in his left leg, but he did not leave the ranks. The 1st Minnesota had saved the day. The next day, O'Neill and his fellow Minnesotans helped repulse Pickett's charge. O'Neill became a sergeant and served until his honorable discharge in 1864. He moved to Reynolds, North Dakota in 1881, then to Thompson, and in 1888 to Grand Forks with his wife, Lila. On this date in 1897, the Grand Forks Herald reported that J. M. O'Neill, feeling deeply honored, had just returned from a visit to the Gettysburg battlefield, where a monument to the 1st Minnesota Regiment had been dedicated. James O'Neill worked in the grain elevator business until his death in 1932 at the age of 73. He was remembered for his patriotic ardor and courage as a Civil War soldier in the valiant 1st Minnesota Regiment. Today's Dakota Datebook is written by Steve Hoffbeck. I'm Merrill Pepcorn.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding from Humanities North Dakota.
Arts programming on Prairie Public is supported in part by the North Dakota Council on the Arts, a state agency developing, promoting, and supporting the arts in North Dakota.
Hi, it's Steve Inskeep.
And I'm Mary Louise Kelly.
If you believe in the mission of this station, but now's not the right time for a financial gift,
donate a vehicle you don't need instead. It's easy to do, and it could mean hundreds of dollars in support.
Learn more on this station's website.
Just go to prairiepublic.org, open the support tab, and choose a vehicle donation.
Trollwood Performing Arts School presents the 2025 main stage musical, Mamma Mia, July 22nd through 26th and July 29th through August 2nd at Blue Stem Center for the Arts, Moorhead, Minnesota. Ticket information at trollwood.org.
And that wraps up this Thursday edition of Main Street here on Prairie Public. We are deeply grateful that you spent time with us. Friday at 3 p.m. Central, we aired The Middle. That's with host Jeremy Hobson. This week's topic, are you worried about America's standing in the world? And at 7 p.m. Central Time Friday, that means it's time for Ira Flatow and Science Friday. From all of us here at Prairie Public, we hope you have a great North Dakota weekend, and we look forward to seeing you again next week right here on Main Street.